And also, Honorable Deputy Minister here, to welcome to you too, madam. And also to the officials of the Department of Social Development, led by the Director General of the Department, as well as the National Development Agency. We're going to start off, Honorable Deputy Minister and TG, with the NDA and the department. Can we have the presentation by the NDA, the National Development Agency, followed by Community Development, section. And then I suppose we would then take the rest of the social welfare services component. And after all the presentations, we'll then have a questions and answers session. You want to comment on that?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and warm and heartily greetings from our Minister in Pretoria, or shall I say, sunny Pretoria. Well, thank you very much for the invitation to present this morning. We had hoped that the sequencing would be slightly different. We thought that we would start with community development from the department, which essentially provides the broader framework within which the NDA work is conducted. After which we would then have a presentation on welfare services and then conclude with the finances. But we will not insist if the committee wishes to hear the NDA say.
So you're proposing community development, NDA, and welfare services. Adam? Do you need a location to this? Fine with that? since the committee has no objection to that proposal, for the
thank you very much, Madam Chair. As you've correctly noted, we are led here by our Deputy Minister, but we also have present members of the Board of the National Development Agency present. I'm sure before their presentation they may have the opportunity to introduce themselves. But we propose to start with the community development presentation, which will be led by the Deputy Director General of Integrated Development, Mrs. Ntlapo. We have hard copies of the presentation, which are, I hope that the members of the committee are not intimidated by the size of it. The first, I would say, 29 pages would essentially be what the Minister spoke to on Thursday last week. So we will not start from the first slide, but instead we will start on slide number 30, which is where Mrs. Ntlapo would focus more specifically on community development. May I also say, Madam Chair, that as promised, we have brought the CDs with copies of the various pieces of legislation that we administer, as well as various policy documents and research papers that have been conducted on a whole range of things. In relation to community development specifically, there's the nodal research work, which is also contained in the CD for members of the committee to read at their leisure. I can now hand over to Mrs. Ntlapo to lead us in the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Honorable Chair and members, Deputy Minister. In terms of community development, this presentation is informed by the priorities which were highlighted last week when we were here presenting to the portfolio committee, the priorities which our DG highlighted, and I'm not going to go back to the priorities, but suffice to indicate that we are contributing, particularly in terms of those key areas which were mentioned around the issues of building human capital and contributing to economic growth and building social cohesion, and particularly the strengthening of our communities. And I need to indicate, before I go to the actual strategic objectives as well as the key outputs that we intend to achieve during this period, that community development by its nature is an area that does not require just one department in terms of achieving it. It requires various stakeholders, various partners, and that is why the key aspect in terms of community development is about ensuring that there is indeed integration of various services, but also cooperation and collaboration with various partners. Because if only it is achieved by one department, there is minimal impact in terms of that. And we are moving from that premise as social development, that we are also contributing to community development that is not the sole mandate of social development only, but requires working together and integrating with various departments. Also, in terms of that, what is important also in terms of community development is the fact that whenever we talk about community development, we refer to development in community and development of communities. And if we are looking, therefore, at the development of communities as well as development in communities, it means we need to look at various aspects, because development in community requires that there indeed there needs to be access in various service delivery areas, and indeed that shows the necessity of the responsibility of various departments. But if we're talking of development of community, it involves a purposive, positive, and structure-oriented effort of people in locality in terms of achieving what is best for them. The branch is integrated development, and the aim of this branch is to create an enabling environment that contributes towards the building of sustainable communities, strengthen the capacity of communities and vulnerable groups to sustain and improve their livelihoods. That is the broad aim of this area of work. In terms of achieving this broad area, the aim of the aim, we have various strategic objectives that inform the key outputs that we will be achieving during this period. And the first strategic objective is to create an enabling environment that contributes towards the building of sustainable communities. And for us to be able to achieve this, there are various key outputs that we have planned that we will be undertaking. And the first one is improving community development practice by developing a community development policy framework and a DSD community development strategy by the end of 2011 financial year. And this is quite an important output given the fact that while I indicated earlier on that community development is the responsibility of various various departments, including social development, there is no policy framework that guides community development in the country. Each department is contributing in terms of community development, but there is no policy framework that guides community development practice. And hence, as part of achieving this or improving this, we are developing the policy framework. And once that policy framework, the overall policy framework has been developed, we will then also develop a DFG community development strategy that begins to define the needs of social development in terms of our contribution, specifically as social development in terms of community development. So that's the first that key output. The second output is the professionalization of community development practice facilitated through the generation, registration, and implementation of community development qualifications and unit standards, registration of community development practitioners. What is, in terms of that key output, we are working very closely. As social development, we have what we call community development practitioners that are working closely. I remember last week there was a question that was raised in terms of what is the role of community development workers vis-a-vis the community development practitioners. As community development practitioners within the Department of Social Development, indeed, as I indicated earlier on, that there is a need to work closely with various departments. There are community development workers who are working closely at local level in terms of ensuring that people at community level are aware, have information in terms of various services that are provided by various departments, and ensure indeed that there is referral, there is link in terms of those services. Within social development, we have the community development practitioners who facilitate community development within communities, and indeed they need to be working very closely. So as a key output in terms of this term, we are working in terms of ensuring that we professionalize community development practice itself, because currently, as I indicated earlier on, that there is not even community development policy framework, but also the community development practice is not professionalized even in terms of qualifications. So we're working at ensuring that there are appropriate qualifications and unit standards at various levels for various community development practitioners within the department. The third output is enhancing the capacity and skills of these community development practitioners through the development of a skills development plan for community development practitioners, because it's important. Currently, there are our community development practitioners, they are at various levels with very different in terms of gaps in terms of their skills. So the intention this period is in terms of enhancing their skills to the extent that we develop a development skills development plan that would identify areas that need to be targeted in terms of building the capacity and the skills of the community development practitioners. We will also be, the guidelines will be developed to improve participation of community-based organizations in community development and for the establishment of community development forums and foundations by 2011. The importance of the community-based organization is that within the community, as we as social development have a role in terms of facilitating community development, but we need to understand that within communities, and this will come up as when the NGA presents in terms of strengthening the capacity of community-based organizations which are within the communities, because we need to be working together with those community-based organizations who play a very critical role also in terms of community development. But most importantly, also strengthening the communities themselves, the structures within communities, to the extent that they are able to drive development within their communities. Because I think what defines democracy is that we are no longer educating to the communities, but we need to begin to listen to the communities. We need to begin to ensure that we have programs that are responding to the needs on the ground. And hence it is important, as you undertake a development within the communities, to recognize the structures within the communities and to begin to work closely with these structures, so that whilst we are facilitating development in the communities, indeed it is owned by the people and it is driven by the people themselves within the communities. Hence it is important to strengthen even those structures. But the importance of foundations also, we know there has been a cry, if I can put it that way, for a long time, that within the communities, most of the time it becomes difficult to undertake certain activities because of limited, financial capacity. And therefore it is important to build foundations that will work together with various stakeholders, especially in terms of funding various activities within the community. Another key output is the training of community development practitioners on integrated development processes, which will be done by the end of the financial year. Again, I indicated earlier on the importance of integrating services and working with various stakeholders at various levels. We have the integrated development planning processes that are happening at the local level. And therefore, it's important to ensure that we train our own community development practitioners to the extent that they work together with within the local government, so that whatever development or changes that are initiated within the communities are informed by the integrated development processes. So hence it is important to train community development practitioners in terms of this aspect. The second key strategic objective is to develop and facilitate the implementation and monitoring of guidelines and programs for sustainable livelihoods. And the key output there is in terms of strengthened capacity of practitioners and communities to achieve sustainable livelihoods by completing and disseminating the sustainable livelihoods toolkit for training of community development practitioners. In terms of a sustainable livelihood, building or achieving sustainable livelihood, it's an approach that is undertaken again, not just by social development, because sustainable livelihood by its nature, it looks at various aspects. It looks at assets, it looks at accessing various services. And therefore, we have taken this approach as a key approach that brings together various areas in terms of ensuring that communities indeed are developed. And therefore, in terms of this key output, it's about ensuring that we capacitate our own practitioners in terms of understanding the approach itself so that they are able to facilitate the approach within the communities. And we have developed various, we will be developing various kits or toolkits that will assist them in terms of working with communities. And these toolkits will range from, for example, if within want to facilitate within the communities in terms of assisting the communities to identify areas of improvement within the communities, there's a kit that will assist the practitioners to work with the communities in terms of identifying or even conducting community-based research. Also, as a second output, we'll be contributing towards alleviation of hunger by developing a concept document on community food banks. We are already engaging in a process where the community food banks are developed within South Africa, and we have a role as social development in terms of contributing to this, in terms of alleviating hunger. And we feel that it is important for working within the community to facilitate the establishment of community food banks. If I can just explain a bit in terms of what community food banks are. This is a concept where we've been working in terms of, we've been working with various departments, the Department of Agriculture, but also with international organizations in the private sector, in terms of ensuring that food that is there reaches those people that are hungry, and this is food that could, and people always think that when you talk about food banks, we are talking about rotten food. And I remember last year there was a lot of people thinking that the concept of food banks is about rotten food. This is food that is directed to those people who are hungry, and the food which could have been wasted, for example, and then we ensure that there is a system that ensures that food, instead of that food being wasted, it's directed to the hungry people. But the importance of this is in terms of us ensuring that it's not just about ensuring that you give food, but how do you ensure, hence it is important for us to develop a concept document that would begin to define the development aspect in terms of that, because it's not just about giving food, but how do you ensure that you capacitate the poor communities themselves so that they can begin also to contribute in terms of whether through rural development, agriculture and so forth, generate food that can be directed in terms of food care. So it's not just about giving, but it's also, it's not just about getting food, but it's also about contributing in terms of that. We will develop guidelines on social cooperatives which will, these guidelines will be disseminated to provinces for implementation by 2011. Again, we usually talk about the cooperatives, and the importance of social cooperatives is what it is, accelerating service delivery, but also ensuring that we take those areas which relate to social development and assist the communities in terms of working together in achieving areas that would also assist them in generating income whilst also contributing in terms of service delivery. We will be facilitating the training of 1,575 Masupasila mentors and the training of the pioneers. Masupasila is a program that we initiated last year for youth. And the intention of this is a pilot project. The intention of this project, which is targeting unemployed youth and those youth that are out of school, is to ensure that you build a sense of activism within the youth, to the extent that the youth do not only see themselves only as recipients of services, but they begin to become change agents themselves and instill the values of responsibility within the youth themselves. And it is linked to also the National Youth Services. We will also be massifying the implementation of the National Youth Services through mainstreaming it within care and support programs in three provinces. The National Youth Services, again, the intention again is to ensure that while building the capacity and the skills of the youth, but also the youth are able to contribute in terms of the services within the communities. And we want to link this in terms of our care and support programs within home community-based care, and also in terms of ensuring that we contribute to the jobs that need to be created by ensuring that we target youth for specific areas within social development so that we can begin to train them and link them for employment but also for the development of skills. We will be strengthening youth work by developing a volunteerism policy. There has been a request and a need for quite a long time in terms of a volunteerism policy, particularly because we have quite a number of youth that is contributing as volunteers in terms of the work that they do, but there is no policy that is guiding this, and the sector has been in need of this volunteerism policy. The strategic objective 4 is to reduce vulnerability to HIV infection and mitigate the impact of HIV and AIDS, and in terms of that, the key output is to develop guidelines to promote behavior change with special emphasis on youth and gender. And I need to indicate also that in terms of reducing vulnerability to HIV infection and mitigating the impact of HIV and AIDS, this is contributing and is in line with the national strategic plan for the country for HIV and AIDS. But most importantly, one of the key issues is in terms of promoting behavior change. We have, when we presented last week, we indicated quite a significant transfer that we make to Love Life. And Live Life is a program that is targeting young people in terms of ensuring that the behavior as well as the prevention of HIV and AIDS is achieved. So we have quite a significant amount of money that is there. So during this period, we will monitor the implementation of Live Life, but also we will strengthen the capacity of home community-based care organizations. Home community-based care organizations are an important area, particularly because these are the organizations that are at the community level that are driving the issues around the reducing the vulnerability in terms of HIV and AIDS and mitigating the impact. But what has come out even previously, we conducted a research that indicated that there are capacity gaps in terms of these organizations. Hence, we are undertaking a program that is looking at strengthening their capacity to the extent that they are able to achieve what is expected in terms of home community-based care. But also ensuring that they, when they achieve their work, they are in compliance of the norms and standards that we have developed as social development. Because again, we discovered that while many organizations are there and are doing home community-based care, most of these organizations were not complying to the norms and standards. The next objective is to ensure efficiency in the administration of non-profit organizations. As you know, honorable members, that we have a responsibility in terms of administering the NPO Act of 1997. And in terms of this key objective, in terms of ensuring efficiency, we will be improving the registration process of NPOs. This is one area also where we have identified challenges, because we've had backlogs in terms of registering the NPOs, but even in terms of the turnaround itself. So during this period, we will be improving the registration process and ensuring that we address the backlogs that are there, but also improve the turnaround time in terms of registering NGOs. Currently, we have over 56,000 registered NGOs, and I will be talking later on in terms of monitoring these NGOs. But most importantly, what we will be doing is also in terms of ensuring that we facilitate the registration process, especially in terms of addressing the turnaround time, ensure that we develop a system, an online registration system for those NPOs that have access in terms of online, but also working very closely, because currently in terms of administering the NPO Act, that is the national competency. It's the role of the national department. But we believe that while it is the national competence, it is important to work closely with the provinces, because these NPOs are within the community. And therefore it's important to work closely with the provinces. Hence we regard as important as part of the key outputs this year to ensure that we capacitate the provinces in terms of facilitating that process of registration, particularly online registration. But also build the institutional capacity of NPOs. One of the challenges that we have is in terms of the capacity of NPOs. We have had, even when we presented last week, Honorable Chair, where we said that we delayed to transfer some of the funds because there were challenges with certain NPOs. This is generally a challenge around the institutional capacity of NPOs. And most of the time you find that they do not meet the requirements in terms of the NPO Act because of the lack of that capacity. And therefore, as a key output, we want to build the institutional capacity of NPOs by developing the institutional capacity framework, but also facilitate its implementation, and again working very closely with the provinces to capacitate the provinces so that we can be able to build the institutional capacity of NPOs. And this is just capacity also relates to the issues, because they are expected, once they register, they are expected to ensure that they comply in terms of the reports and so forth. And sometimes we find that it's difficult for the NPOs to do this thing. We would also target rural and poverty nodes for institutional capacity. And the reason why we have targeted the rural and poverty nodes for institutional capacity is because if you look, you find that the most areas where there are capacity gaps is in the rural areas and the nodal areas. Hence, we have targeted these areas to say we need to target them to build the institutional capacity so that we can begin to ensure that these NPOs are capacitated. In terms of administration of the NPO Act, we are expected to monitor the compliance of all the registered NPOs. And as I indicated, currently we have over 56,000 NPOs. We are expected to monitor compliance of NPOs in terms of the Act and ensure that they submit various documents that are required. This is a very
challenging area given the number of NPOs that are there and looking at the size of the unit that is dealing with this. This is a challenge. We also need to improve communication and share information on NPOs, not just about sharing information on NPOs, but also ensure, because particularly when you go to the rural areas, you find that most of the communities are not even aware what are the, well, registration also is voluntary, but the communities lack information on what steps need to be followed in terms of registering. So it is important to ensure that, again, we have information sessions where we begin to say, if you want to register, these are the things that you need to do, these are the documents that you require, this is how you do, and if we begin to do that, we are also facilitating the registration and even ensuring that by the time organizations decide to register, they know exactly what is expected of them. So we will be improving communication and sharing information. But also as part of the NPO Act, there's information that comes from various registered organizations that we're supposed to share with various various stakeholders. For example, if a donor community, they would want to assist various NPOs, we need to be able, because they're expected to submit their annual reports and also the funding that is there. So we would ensure that the information that we have, we share the information, and this information will be available online. That those are the key outputs that we will be achieving as part of community development. But also, as you can see, a lot of our work requires working very closely with the various agencies and various stakeholders. And hence, it is even important working very closely with the National Development Agency in terms of ensuring that we build capacity, but also ensure that those organizations within the communities are funded in terms of achieving what they need to achieve. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Michlapo. DG, you want to add anything?
Thanks, Minister. I don't really need to add anything. Just one small editorial comment, that each time you read by 2000 and this or that year, you must substitute the by the word in. Because if you say by 2009, it means last financial year. If you say by 2010, 2011, you mean by the end of this financial year. Strictly speaking, linguistically. But I know what the intention is, so I'm just making that editorial comment.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, as we agreed previously, we will now go over to the ETA presentation. And would you please introduce your team and the members of the board that are here?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to Minister. Thank you for the invitation, all members of the Portfolio Committee. My name is Mutwadrini Madzivandira. I am the board member of the National Development Agency, appointed in terms of the Act. I resumed the office last year, 2007, September. We're supposed to be out of the office on next year, September, I think, for the period of 3 years. The chairperson of the board requested me to leave the delegation to come and do the presentation before the portfolio committee. The chairperson would have wanted to be here, but unfortunately, due to unforeseen circumstances, he couldn't make it, but asked me to do that. So I agreed to the request. With me, I've got a team of executives who will do the presentation. I will introduce Rashida, who will do the strategy of the NGA first, and then Mr. Ruben Mukhano, who is responsible for the core business of the NGA, will introduce how we go about doing business at the NGA. The Chief Financial Officer will also lay out the finances of the NGA and some issues that relate to the management of finances within the NGA. Critical to the presentation is to introduce how we go about doing business within the NDA, which will be led by Mr. Muhano. I think it is important for members of the Portfolio Committee to get the real understanding of how we go about linking what Ms. Nsapho has just demonstrated now, which should be, which is the activities that are rendered on behalf of the shareholder, the Department of Social Development, by one agent of state, which is the NDA, while other agents of state will do other things. We will be doing what we are supposed to be doing at that presentation. Chairperson, thank you. Let me take this opportunity and ask Rashida to start the presentation.
Morning, everybody. Thanks for the opportunity. I will start our presentation. I think that the NDA is a scheduled fee organization and is governed by the CFMA. The NDA has a primary mandate and a secondary mandate according to legislation. And the first mandate is to contribute to eradication of poverty and its causes by granting funds to civil society organizations. It's also supposed to, and it does, implement development projects in poor communities, especially in the rural communities. It strengthens the civil society organizations by capacity building, and we'll talk more about this project that we do and how we go about doing this capacity building project. Our secondary mandate is to promote consultation, dialogue, sharing of development experience between the civil society organizations and the state. We also do debate development policies, and we undertake research in the development area. Our vision of the NDA is to develop a society free from poverty. Our mission is to facilitate development through targeted grant funding, research, and strategic partnerships. I've discussed our primary mandate, so I'll continue there, and our secondary mandate also. This strategy we're presenting here, Madam Chair, is for 2009 to 2012. The board has approved four strategic goals, and the first goal is to promote sustainable development, and the purpose of this goal is to contribute to the eradication of poverty through grant funding and resource mobilization. Grant funding is our core business, and our second part of our presentation will focus on how we go about doing this on an annual basis. Resource mobilization care, the board has taken a strategic decision and decided that 65% of our grants we obtain from the fiscus will be allocated directly to granting funds or to projects and to civil society organizations. The rest of the money, 35%, will be allocated for salaries, administration, due diligence, etc. So 65% of our money goes to direct funding. Currently, this year, we have a shortfall, so 60% of our money is going to direct projects, and the rest is for administration, due diligence, case studies, and research. Next year, we're targeting the 65-65 principle. Under this goal, our outputs are food security projects, income-generating, and agricultural projects. Most of our projects are focused around food security, income generating, and our aim this year and in future is to make these projects sustainable, so that these people, the poor people in these communities, can make a livelihood from these projects. And then secondly, also to provide capacity building. In each of the projects we fund, we also allocate capacity building and training funding for them. Various training takes place, and our second half of our presentation will also discuss what kind of training takes place in our projects. We have a strategic goal 2, and this is to promote organizational sustainability, development practice, and excellence. This goal is focused internally, and the purpose is to develop income streams to build and sustain the capacity to enable us to operate efficiently and effectively. Chairperson, we receive about 400 applicants for projects on an annual basis, more than 400, and we can only just fund about 70, 80 of those projects. So we really need additional income, and we are trying this year to partner and to develop all additional income streams to distribute and grant funds and projects to rural communities. And under this goal, strategic goal 2, we are going to try to raise 50 million rand by 2012. And for this year, 2009-10 financial year, our aim is to get 10 million rand additional for projects. We have to reposition the organization. When we say that, we've got to be known more in the rural development areas. We're not known there. We're basically known more in the sectors but we're not getting to the people that really need us. So we're trying to reposition ourselves as an organization. Vulnerable groups identify and empower. Reduce cost to achieve 65% direct project funding and 35% support cost. So we're still moving towards that, but at the moment our cost is 60-40. Approved and aligned organizational structure to the strategy. This is an HR process we're embarking on. Best practice policies, procedures, and strategic unit strategies. Unit strategies aligned to NDA strategy. Compliance and good governance, living the NDA values. We have achieved an unqualified audit for the last 2 years, Chair, so I'm hoping that that's going to be maintained. So our governance and governance, we hope to improve and maintain. Goal 3 is to promote interface between CSOs, research institution, development practice, and the state on development issues. Interface between the CSOs and the state. Our mandate is to let the state know what are the issues in the state-owned enterprise, the civil society organization. We need to make the state aware and influence policies at all times. Our purpose here is to facilitate dialogue to inform development policy and service delivery. Our output here, Chair, is to develop a sector relevant and recognized plan for dialogue, measure the efficiency of dialogue facilitated on public policy, grant funding, and service delivery issues, dialogue facilitated on relevant development issues. On an annual basis, we have a national conference and we have provincial conferences, Chair. Our strategic goal 4 is to facilitate research that informs grant funding decisions, procedures, and development policies. The purpose here is to facilitate information and knowledge generation to strengthen the development programming of the NDA and informing development practice and policies. Our output here is a functional database. This is in our research unit chair. We have a database about 300-400 civil society organizations registered and different types of civil societies. We have a functional resource center where you have different kinds of development information you can find in it, detailed reports of funded projects, sector-specific studies, documents produced, and lessons shared from case studies and influence policies. Influence policy. Chair, we also have provincial strategies, and we fund our projects in provinces. And I'm going to ask the executive director to tell the committee more about how we go about doing business in our sectors, in our provinces, and in
Thank you, Chair. As the acting CEO has indicated, 65% of our total grant allocation goes to direct grant funding. And the biggest grant allocation goes to KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, and Limpopo Province for a range of historical and scientific reasons. The basis for the proportional split share has to do with the statistics that we use as a basis for determining the allocation for provinces. There is a debate in the country around the accuracy and the liveliness of the statistics, but that is a conversation that is beyond the scope of the presentation, Chair. But for our purpose, we are saying we are relying on official statistics to determine allocation for poverty eradication. However, Chair, we acknowledge that there is emerging body of evidence, particularly from the Free State, Northwest, and Mpumalanga, that indicates that those provinces are equally needy, and we have adjusted our formula to take that into account. We just want to give you an indication, Chair, of the grant allocations that we receive from government to contribute to poverty eradication. There is a public conception that the NDA has enormous resources. And I just want to re-emphasize the fact that was made by the acting CEO that progressively over time, the resources have quite been minimal. In 2001, Chair, we had 92.7 million total grant allocation. 2002-2003, it was 96.7. 2003-2004, it was 103. 2004-5, 109. 2005-6-129, 2006-7-123, last year 129, this year 136, and 910 is 144. How do we do our grant-making business, Chair? The NDA supports two primary sectors, and the sectors are income generation and food security. When I talk about income generation, I'm referring to those activities that have the potential to create income streams for households, but also that have the potential to create jobs. When we talk about food security, we are talking about those community interventions that have the potential to enable communities to generate their own food, but also to upscale to become commercial enterprises. Chair, I think you would agree that the foresight around food security was quite strategic because, as we have seen over the past 2-3 years, the issue of food security is quite paramount in the country at the moment. We grant funds through two approaches. The first approach is request for proposals, and the second one is program formulation. Honorable members, let me just take a few minutes to explain the two approaches. With respect to request for proposals, the NDA goes out to communities and invite applications. We go out to communities through mainstream newspapers, community radio stations. We place communication in district municipality offices and so on to invite communities to apply. And this will be based on a predetermined sectoral focus. What I mean by that is that we wouldn't just go to the Northern Cape and say we will target all district municipalities in the Western Cape or Northern Cape. We'll say, given the poverty indices, we will target Kalahari, we will target many, yes. Thanks, Honorable Member from the PC. We will target certain municipalities and invite community-based organizations, cooperatives, FBOs in those particular municipalities to apply. We would not prescribe in terms of what activities we would fund. For instance, if the driver, the economic driver in the Northern Cape is gold farming, that's what we will support. If the driver for KZN is ecotourism, that's what we will support. We would not say specifically we are supporting aquafishing and we will only support aquafishing. So that's what we do in respect of request for proposals. What we have noticed, honorable members, over time is that the shortcoming of the request for proposal approach is that it favors more established organizations. And that over time, organizations that have perfected the art of developing proposals would ordinarily be the ones that receive funding. And we have moved from that to say, inasmuch as we need a competitive process for accessing funding, there is also a need to proactively reach out to communities to engage in social mobilization with the view of supporting community initiatives. And that's why we introduced the aspect of program formulation. Basically, this involves our development managers on the ground, food soldiers, going into specific targeted areas, mobilizing communities, identifying with them what needs to be supported, and then eventually supported. And obviously, we don't do this programming outside of broadly defined government program of action, provincial growth and development strategies, and the IDPs of different municipalities. Chair, over time, this slide reflects what we have committed to respective provinces from 2003 to last year. The committee might also just want to know how much have we spent. And in 2003-2004, we paid out 104 million to fund a project. In 2005, 90 million. 2005-06, 55, 67, 49.5. Last year, 76.1. And in this financial year, which is also last year, 180 million. I just want to correct that in your slide, it reflects in 2007-08, 76.6. And in 2008-09, 85 million. I needed to correct that chapter. Chairperson, you heard when the Community Development Unit was presented that we have a big problem in the country in respect of institutional capacity for civil society organizations. And we just want to summarize that. Over the past 5 years, we have upscaled our intervention in respect of institutional capacity, and that we are also working on strengthening NGO networks and consortia so that they may have a coordinated voice around influencing public policy. We introduced a program, Chairperson, 3 years ago of building capacity, and we invested around 25.7 million. And we are beginning to see the fruits of our investment over the past 2 years. The purpose really of the NGO strengthening program is to strengthen institutional capacity of grassroots organizations to deliver quality services and programs to alleviate poverty. And we do that through a number of interventions. The problem that we find is that NGOs and CBOs with institutional capacity does not facilitate effective delivery at local level. And we are arguing that social entrepreneurship in communities is not organized, nurtured through targeted capacity enhancement initiatives, and that we have a responsibility as an organization, obviously, to strengthen the capacity of NGOs, CBOs, and cooperatives. Over the past 3 years, Chairperson, these are just interesting statistics, but since 2000, we've been able to commit projects in the areas or sectors of economic development, food security, community health, and education. And what we have, this investment has benefited 417,000 households directly and indirectly benefiting just over 2.2 million. And we arrive at the 2.2 million using the conventional benchmark of one person to five people in a particular household laboratory chamber. I'm not going to go into much detail around the details of our capacity building program. I would like to hand over to our CFO to give me the final. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Before you start, can I give you maximum 10 minutes to
Chair, let me take you direct to the numbers as far as the NDA is concerned. The NDA was allocated 144.7 million for the financial year 2009-10. And if you look at the next line in terms of the numbers, we have 26 million in terms of interest. Let me just explain where the interest of the NDA comes from. Due to the nature of the grant of the NDA that run between 12 to 36 months, at any given time, the NDA has holding in its bank account a substantial amount of money, because the funding, the granting is divided into tranches. So we hold on to tranches of the project funding up until they fall due. So while we're holding on to those funds, we earn interest on those funds. This is another thing. I think when the acting CEO did mention that the NDA needs to raise more funds, if we look at how the NDA's grant has gone since 2002, you find that it's been increasing by between 4 to about 5%, whereas the cost of doing business for the NDA has been increasing by between 7 to about 10%. So the admin expenses have continuously increased at a level higher than that of the grant increase. Hence, the NDA, for it to survive, it will need to find another source of income to maintain the 65-35 split between direct funding and admin expenses. If the NDA does not get any other form of funding going forward, in 7 years, you find that the entire grant of the NDA that it receives from social development goes towards admin expenses. And I don't think anyone wants a situation like that. So the NDA has taken a decision that through its board that all the grant it receives from the DSD, it will cap it at 65%. And then NDA either has to reduce costs or find other sources of income for it to be able to support the admin side of the expenditure. If you look at it, if you add the numbers with the next slide that shows the cost, you find that direct funding, with all the due diligence and the direct support costs of the project, it comes to 95 million. And admin, that includes salaries and all these other admin expenses, comes to 75 million. I think the board and the senior management have come to an understanding and agreement that with the 75 million rate of admin expenditure, NDA is capable of dispersing much more funds than it's currently allocated. I think Ruben did mention that in terms of the RFP process, we received close to 400 applications. Of those 400 applications that we received, we are only able to service 25%. In terms of the financial analysis that we carried out, is that we can go up to 50% without necessarily increasing on our admin expenses in terms of the direct funding. We have shown the finances here broken down into project funding. I just want to take you to the parts that go to direct project cost, which will be the business plans that support the what Ruben was talking about. When we're doing project formulation, when we go to a community, we say that we identify the needs of the community as we are developing them into a fundable organization. Then we help them with business plans, we help them with all sorts of issues in terms of budgeting, in terms of the registration, if they need to be a registered MPO, also, or things like that. That's what goes into business plans. And all these other support costs that come up to 5.4 million.
And then the other part of the cost is admin cost that I talked about. 26.8 million goes towards different directors in terms of their rentals, their travels, and generally all the other admin costs. And then we have a staff cost of 48.5 million for 2009-10. In brief, Chair, this is what our finances look like.
Thank you, Chair. That's the end of our presentation.
Thank you very much. Can we go over to the social welfare services discussion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Mabetla will be leading us in that presentation. From that thick document we handed out. Point of rest. Okay, thanks, Madam Chair.
Dario Macarrella. Es la que uso Camacho. Es
weird. A punto de
Ay, ok. ¿Eh? Ay, ok. Me hace para mí de mal ahí, como.
Did they remove it? Yeah, it's on the memory stick.
O dog is a shepherd.
No, non ne save me. You were saved last week.
Thank you, honorable members, the deputy minister, and the senior members of the department. I'm going to present on the welfare services branch. This program, its main function is policy development, review, and implementation support for welfare services. The program creates an enabling environment for the delivery and accessibility of integrated social welfare services in partnership with all relevant stakeholders. This branch contributes towards the strategic priorities of the department, mainly the tackling child poverty, tackling older persons and the adult poverty. It contributes also to social cohesion and sector capacity building. And the welfare services have been as old as, you know, services to vulnerable groups in this country since the inception of social welfare services in the 1980s. And they've been mainly delivered by NGOs, of course, with assistance from government. And in the recent past, we've seen quite a lot of transformation, government taking responsibility, but working very closely in partnership with the civil society organizations. Within the branch itself, we have the branch is divided into different sub-programs. We've got social crime prevention, which deals with victim empowerment programs, the substance abuse program, social crime prevention. Social crime prevention includes probation services, especially within the context of child justice. And we also have the children's program, which currently is quite busy with training for the implementation of the Children's Act. But that includes ECD, which is, as you know, is the apex priority of programs in government. And we have welfare services transformation. Within the welfare services transformation, we have service standards. We've got services to families. We've got services to older persons and people with disabilities. And then we also have a service provider support and management, which is really a sub-program that deals with our partnership, manages our partnerships with NGOs. I'm going now into our annual performance targets for this financial year. The first one is it's welfare. They are quite mixed. I did not separate them per sub-programs, but later there was a request last week that the portfolio committee, the members wanted to have more information on social crime prevention and substance abuse. So I've zoomed on that a little bit later on, towards the end of my presentation. But for now, I'll just, the priorities, the targets are just listed as I present them. The first one is improve welfare services delivery by developing, piloting, and implementing. No, I think I have to go to the to this slide. The first one is developing, piloting, and implementing NAMSAN standards for delivering social welfare services during this financial year. That's what we are doing. We in the welfare service, within welfare services, have not had NAMSAN standards of delivering our services, and this has created major problems in terms of resource allocation, especially in terms of human resources and of course financial and infrastructure. This NAMSAN standards, we hope that once they are finalized, we'll be able to know exactly what is required when we deliver welfare services. Currently, we have the high level of NAMSAN standards, which are linked to the model, that the service delivery model that we developed in the department. But they are very high level and they are not assisting us. We need operational NAMSAN standards, and that's what we're developing now. Providing adequate financial, adequate funding to national bodies over the MTF period. This is mainly to national bodies. We, as we know, the provincial NGOs are funded by the provincial department. We have, last year we funded 18 national NGOs, and we hope that that number will increase this year because the funding has also doubled. Amending the Social Service Professions, we are amending the Social Service Professions Act of 1978, and we need to amend it so that it's more accommodative of other social service professions, and that we manage the professions that deliver services to our people more effectively. And then we also are going to finalize the policy on social services, which will be the policy that will help us to strengthen our relationship with the NGOs within the welfare sector and improve on the funding of the NGOs. We are providing, due to the scarcity of social workers, that young people tended to go and to look at other professions other than social work. We've got a scholarship in the department. Treasury allocated almost 300 million rand since the financial year 7 and 8 up to this financial year. We hope that this funding will continue. Currently, we've got 400 social work students who are on this scholarship, and 4,000 social work students who are on this scholarship, and almost 800, more than 800 graduated, social work students graduated last year. So we're starting to see the increase of social workers in the field to deliver services. I think one reason why we discovered that there's such a need is when we costed the Children's Act, we found that in order for us to implement it adequately, we will require 16,000 social workers, and we didn't have them at that time. In government, we had only about 4,000 social workers at the moment, so we really need more. And we've got the Older Persons Act as well to implement, and the Management and Treatment of Substance Abuse Act also needs to be implemented. So these are such types of services that mostly require professionals such as social workers to implement it. And the next one is reduce substance abuse by developing regulations for the Prevention and Management of Substance Abuse Act by 2010 and 11. we have the act, these regulations are for the act that has been developed, and the act has been was acceded to by the president in March this year, and we hope that this regulation will take us a year to develop so that we implement the act next year. We also need to undertake research on substance abuse because we know very little about what is happening out there in the country on substance abuse. This research will help us to improve on the program. We need to transform services to older persons by developing service delivery guidelines. We also need to protect and promote the rights of people with disabilities by facilitating the development and implementation of policies, legislation and strategies on disability, and developing programs for residential care facilities for people with disabilities. We have already had a policy which is developed. Currently we're costing it. All that we need is to train the service providers in order to implement that policy and our provincial counterparts. We're also intending this year to transform services to older persons by developing service delivery guidelines. These guidelines will be aligned with the Older Persons Act, and this will enable us to implement the Older Persons Act effectively. We also intending to improve the protection and care of children by facilitating the implementation of the Children's Act of 2005 as amended, and through developing policies, strategies and programs to promote the children's rights, focusing mainly on child protection, which includes child abuse, neglect and exploitation of children, alternative care, adoption of orphans and services to orphans and vulnerable children. This also includes the services that we render to children within the early childhood development program. What we are currently doing is to develop the implementation plans for the Children's Act, so that each department has got those implementation plans, and to build the capacity of service providers, provinces, and everyone will be delivering on this act to understand what it entails and the resources that it will require. We are planning designing and implementing a South African surveillance system for child abuse, neglect and exploitation. I think that's like substance abuse. We know which provinces are at risk in terms of child abuse, neglect and exploitation, but we need to confirm that information through the surveillance system, so that when we develop programs, we'll be targeted to those areas. We got funding from CEDAC, the Canadian International Agency, funding agency that is funding this surveillance system. They provided us with 65 million grants for this project. We also intend to empower families by developing an integrated plan for implementing the family policy and development of minimum norms and standards by next year, next financial year. Currently the family policy was supposed to have been approved by cabinet, but they've returned it back to the department. They've requested us to develop a green paper instead, which will be widely consulted. And then the way forward from there on, either it will, then they'll confirm it as a policy, or we'll have a white paper on family, on services to family. Because this is an integrated, it includes the services that are delivered by other departments as well. We also intend to protect people affected by violence and crime by developing a shelter strategy and an integrated plan for implementing the victim empowerment policy, and developing guidelines on dealing with human trafficking, rape, domestic violence, and violent crime. We intend to strengthen probation services, social crime prevention, and integrated child justice services. We also intend to develop a social crime prevention strategy and diversion accreditation framework. The social crime prevention strategy, and especially the diversion accreditation framework, this is a statutory service that is within the Child Justice Act, and social development inspectors, it's mandated to deliver almost 70% of the services that are provided for in the Child Justice Act. I'm just going to focus now on substance abuse and the Central Drug Authority. This year we are going to draft the regulations for the Prevention and Treatment for Substance Abuse Act. And just as I said, it's going to take us a year to develop the regulations, and we hope that next year this time we'll be implementing this legislation. And we're drafting the adult prevention and model will be finalized and approved, the prevention on substance abuse. Aftercare and reintegration model will be approved as well this year. Community-based model for substance abuse will be finalized and approved. The outpatient long-term standards will also be finalized and approved. We will conduct the substance abuse research. We also intending to hold a biannual substance abuse summit. This summit was supposed to be held in October. The CDA is now shifted to February next year. What we are doing, we are also supporting the implementation of the Gemoja space. It's a prevention program and awareness raising program in two provinces through training, media, roadshow with ambassadors, and monitoring of trend activities by provinces. The department supports the Central Drug Authority, which is mandated mainly within the Substance Abuse Act, to monitor the implementation of the drug master plan by the different government departments, even civil society organizations, and it ensures that all the forums, the provincial and local governments that deliver on the drug master plans are established and supported. The secretarial support is no longer linked. It was linked with the program within the department, substance abuse program in the department. It's now supported within the Office of the DDG Welfare Services. I think the achievements, you might know, want to know what are the achievements as far as substance abuse and the CDA are concerned. What we have achieved so far, is the fact that the Prevention of and Treatment for Substance Abuse Act has been signed by the President and is just waiting the regulation for implementation. We've developed minimum long-term standards for inpatient treatment centers. The department has developed its mini drug master plan, and we are implementing it currently. We've got aftercare and reintegration model, community-based model, and adult prevention model, which we've developed in last year. We Gemoja awareness program has been rolled out in two provinces, Gauteng and KZN. And we've capacitated 550 service providers on the implementation of the National Drug Master Plan and National Helpline on Substance Abuse has been developed in pilot in Gauteng. Social crime prevention, I think the main thing here to mention is the fact that we are finalizing we're developing a social crime prevention strategy. Social development does not have its own specific social crime prevention strategy. And we're also developing long-term standards for secure care. There was quite a lot of concern with regards to secure care facilities, especially within the JCPS, that our long-term standards for secure care are not really up to standards. And we need to indicate, especially with regards to the infrastructure, and the number of personnel that has to look after the children in secure care facilities. Secure care facilities are for children who are awaiting signs within the day-to-day situation. The development of national policy framework for diversion with accreditation system and the impact of assessment on the management of awaiting child today detainees project. With the victim empowerment is a shelter strategy that we are developing this year. In fact, it's an improvement of the one that we have. And we have a strategy for men and boys and capacity building of NGOs that are delivering, that are implementing the strategy and the provincial department. And we have a draft guidelines on services related to human trafficking, domestic violence, rape, violent crimes. This will be finalized and the capacity, and it will be also linked with capacity building of all the sectors. We're developing an integrated plan for victim empowerment policy guidelines. We're developing norms and standards for victim empowerment services. We're implementing an EU victim empowerment program, which is funded by the EU, and the facilitation, we're facilitating one-stop centers with the UNODC and management and monitoring of CARA funds. So this is a huge program. We got quite a lot of funds from the EU to improve and strengthen our victim empowerment program. The achievement as far as victim empowerment is that we did research on domestic violence. We had a conference last year on victim empowerment. We also had a summit for the civil society organizations that are implementing the victim empowerment program. And within social crime prevention, we developed guidelines for home-based supervision, reception assessment, and referral centers. These were drafted and finalized. When children, most children were awaiting trial because the correctional services department will really not want to have children in correctional services. And as a result, the department has to come up with initiatives to ensure that the children are kept away from correctional services. This is done through secure care facilities. We have home-based supervision as well. Our probation services have to be available for the reception assessment and referral centers to assess the children so that they are adequately placed. We have a resource directory for probation services. This has been drafted and finalized, and services for children awaiting trial are provided in 6 correctional facilities. Of course, there are children who cannot be, who have to be in correctional services because they've committed very, very serious crimes like murder, rape, or they've committed crime with adults, serious crime with adults, so they have to be placed in correctional services. And while they are there, social development is mandated to provide them with services. We have a capacity building program on probation services and related matters, and 314 service providers were trained. Okay, that's the end of my presentation.
Thank you very much, Dr. Did you already touch on the finances again?
Yes, Madam Chair, thanks very much. As you will recall, the finances were in fact presented last week, but we weren't too certain whether we had allocated enough time for members of the committee to interact with that part of the presentation. So it's not really making a new presentation, but allowing more opportunity for members of the committee to interact. If there are any aspects that they would like to have restated, I'm certain we can do that.
Yeah, why don't we then go about it this time? Members can improve the finance session to that final then in the session that we in the speech presentation. We have a whole hour to deliberate.
Mm.
So that will give us enough time. And also those of standing sessions, there's some members have specific positions. So if there's other standing sessions that I'd like to ask the SASA, the NDA and the Department of Social Development, still have the opportunity. Thank you very much. That is the general and team for these presentations. Now I'll hand over to members to start with the questions. Since members are still okay, I've noted honourable member.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to find out on the issue of the community finding. They mentioned something like the funding community activities. Now I want to know who is funding these community activities. And the second one is on the 4,000 students. I just want to find out when they finish their studies, they absorb them or they go wherever they want. Thank you.
Thank you. The issue of the community development workers, it's clear that there's no useful busy working on a policy framework and the units, study units and things that are being applied. But what criteria is currently being used? Because BCDW is already taken up within the program. So currently, while all of this is still in process, what criteria is being used? I want to talk a bit on NPO funding, because it's a thorn in my flesh. NPOs that are registered, that are delivering services for government, that are our major stakeholders, let's say, and delivering services for us, often find that their funding is not, does not come through timeously. And we know that this results in provinces. But I'd like to just dwell on that a moment, because these NPOs often, I look at it from various services that are provided by these NPOs. We know that we have a major shortage of social workers in the country. Some of these social workers are based within these NPOs that are delivering services for us. And many a time we see them going with our salaries. Because funding is there, but it is not paid timely to the various organizations. Organizations which have been approved and the programs approved, the reports sent in timely, and we often have to go out as members serving on these NPOs, have to go and bail out and get bank overdrafts and things for these NPOs. So that for me, I'd like to now ask them to be addressed. And then I look at all these programs and that are going to be implemented within the financially, very, very impressive. It's very good programs that our country needs, and to develop our people. I come from a local government background, and I know at local government we have what we call an SDBIP, Service Delivery and Implementation Plan. I'd like to know if we have something within the department, timelines as to when these are going to be implemented, because we say we want to see these programs being done within this financial year, within 2009-2010. But have we pegged within which quarter of the year what we're going to have ready? That I think is for me more important, to see when the implementation is going to be taking place. So something like a service delivery implementation plan for these programs. The last thing I want to touch on is NDA funding. Again, from a local government background, we see lots and lots of funding going into communities and into projects, but we also see lots of projects collapsing. Lots of projects that is not financially sustainable. They are only sustainable as long as we pump money into those projects. I want to know what mechanisms are being used to monitor whether these projects are sustainable, that money is being put into. Is there a report on every project that NDA is putting money into as to what is happening within that project? Are they sustainable? Are they creating jobs? Are they becoming self-sufficient? And do those reports come back? Is it available? Can we see that? Because only then we can measure our effectiveness. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Member Lamula. Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. The previous speaker has said that we have to ask if our minds are working in one tune, one line.
Microphone, please. My first question to all these departments that presented, and these are excellent, excellent programs that you want to implement. But are we going to succeed? And I'm not being negative, I'm just now being, how can I say, seeing the reality of when these things will be implemented. Will we be able to reach our targets with all the programs that you people have in place to be implemented? Especially with a lack of social workers. 800 social workers qualifying per year is very insufficient to all the areas that they need to oversee, to monitor, to evaluate, and to work in. And truly, you know, usually in municipalities we have this IDP programs, and I always say it's a wish list. I sincerely would not like this department to become a wish list of programs and projects, excellent projects, excellent programs, but never ever being implemented or implemented and lacking perhaps resources, especially social workers in these districts or community development workers. And here I am extremely worried about the rural areas that suffer the most. And the department is aware of the rural area suffering. They are very much aware of it because it comes up in the presentation. And year after year, and I've been here for 5 years, this has been, the rural areas were always mentioned, but never ever really seen to lifted in so many ways. And it is the rural areas that are suffering the most. And the department is aware of it. And then, challenges facing these departments. Nobody spoke on challenges. Everything is hunky-dory in the department. Nobody has challenges. Nobody needs extra money. Nobody needs extra resources. You're doing very, very well if that is the case. I wanted to speak on funding of NGOs, and I would like to actually plead to the department to say NGOs are really implementing legislation. They are the people working at grassroots. They are the people doing what social workers or community development workers cannot do. Is it not possible for the department to look at something like compensation of especially the top structures of these NGOs that drive the things, that does the work that social workers cannot do or that the department cannot do? I have put the question to our minister on this one too. I've made so many Sorry, I've made so many marks here. I've got such a lot to ask you people. Scholarships were provided in the past financial year, 4,000 social workers. But believe me, I have about four or five CVs of social workers that qualify that simply do not get a job. So what's the use of giving scholarships, getting social workers qualified and not having jobs to put them into? What is the reason for that? And my next question is implementation, resources to implement. Do you have sufficient resources to implement? On page 46, output for 2019, substance abuse, I said, why only two provinces? Why only two provinces? Because all provinces are battling with substance abuse at present. And it is rising in many of the other provinces too. Why only two provinces? Oh yes, correctional services, six correctional facilities. I would like the department to name them, so that, because I visit these facilities, I would like to have their names so that I can visit them. And then on the NDA strategy plan, that is on page, what is, I don't know, I've got a page here. Food security project funded, income generated, targeted agriculture and agribusiness. I said the results on the sustainability of these projects. What percentage do you achieve? Because if one invests, one needs to have interest or dividends in any project. Do you achieve any interest rates? And this is especially on the and sustainability comes up right through the presentation. Are these projects really sustainable? Who monitors these projects? Who evaluates these projects to see that they are sustainable? So many times I come across projects that for the first year they run. They just, they're making profits and they're making money and they're turning it around. But after that, everything falls flat. And it is money that's been invested and there are no interest or dividends coming out of that money. Who monitors? Who monitors? Because it's useless giving money and there are nobody monitoring that. I spoke on the rural areas and I would really love the department at this point in time to now be serious about the rural areas. My constituency is in a seasonable area and the season is now long past and it is now the private sector that needs to see to that people get soup or whatever. Projects can be implemented, but it just do not happen. And then on the different provinces, are you going to stick on it? Yeah, my last question then, I was jumped some questions. The financial year 2008-2009, and I'm really, really sorry I didn't work through the financial statement put forward to us. How many jobs, sustainable jobs have been created through these projects? 118 million is a substantial amount. How many sustainable jobs have been created? I'll stop there for this question. Thank you.
Honourable Member Lamola, I've noted Honourable Member November, and I've noted Honourable Member Kopani. Yeah, okay.
Thank you, Sepasan. Mine is just an addition to what Honourable Nell has said. Is the department giving enough training, especially on budgeting, to this community project? Because some of them are collapsing because of not knowing how to work and how to draw up their budgeting. The second one is on, I think it's on page 32. I just wanted to know that the 100 community development practitioners, are they spread over the provinces, or is the 100 only for one province, or how do they go about? Thank you, Chair.
Thank
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe my colleagues have taken my questions, but I still have questions to ask. My first question is to NDA. I understand that here we are having an acting chief executive officer. What happened to the one who was employed in that country? That's my first question. Second question, according to the to the presentation here on page 18, NDA has indicated numbers of projects that have been given funding according to different provinces. May they kindly give us the details according to specific area? Maybe you say in Free State. Free State, apparently about 39 projects have been approved. Specifically, which towns, what are the names of those projects so that we can know where are they allocated. And the other thing regarding the projects that have been given funding, we just wanted to find out how many of these projects are income-generating projects, and then how many jobs have been created out of those projects. That's what I'm looking for. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chair. I've got questions to ask. Here we're having duplication of programs. We've got CDWs, those are the community development workers, who are doing the same work as the CDPs. We fought in the past years to say that the integration of this, the interdepartmental forum must be there so that someone is doing something else and the other one is doing something else. When I look at the CDWs, we just discover that they are doing the job that is done by the headmen, the counselors, and everybody. So now we're looking at the funds, at the money. If the CDWs are doing what the CDPs can do, can I just get clarity in that matter? And then I'm coming back to the monitoring process. The documents are good, the policies are good, everything is good with both the department and DA. But you don't know where you lose this. Is it between the national body and the provinces and down to the regions? What actually takes place? Because if, for instance, you are talking about these scholarships, I would just ask, who are the beneficiaries? Who are supposed to be the beneficiaries of this scholarship? Let's assume in the region of Limpopo, there are children there who want to apply for the scholarship. They don't get the scholarship. Then the scholarships for Limpopo are benefited by children from maybe Mpumalanga. Does that make sense? And in the department, I would like just to have a clarity. If you do have the whistleblowing program, because if it's lost between national and the provinces, then what do the communities have to do to inform the National Department of Social Development that the program you put in place are not working in our area, because this and that is happening. So that we don't blame the government always and say the government is not delivering, and yet it's just the individuals who are not delivering. For instance, we are having problems of these young offenders. The young offenders, we've got 10 today, we've got 22 tomorrow, and 50 that day. What do we do about these young offenders? Can't they be placed in this project that the social development is, so that they serve their lighter sentences there? And can't you be looking at the reformatory schools? Because a child would leave the school at doing grade 4 and becomes a street kid. When you are looking at this street kid, he or she is going to go to the center where they are kept at night. In the morning, he or she is going back to the streets. and do all the bad things there, and then in the afternoon come back to the place of safety, get food, get water, and it ends there. So when we talk about the reformatory schools, we are saying if the child is leaving school doing grade 4, he or she will be doing grade 5, 6, 7, up to 10, and up to university level, confined there, so that he cannot continue doing these things. And if the child is being taken to prison, for instance, prison doesn't change the behavior. He said when he comes out, or he comes out, he's more than what he used to be. So would really, to say the social development has to also look at our views, our suggestions, and our input. You know, at one stage there was a project of about 500,000. It happened, it was an agricultural project funded by the Department of Social Development in one of the areas of South Africa. They only managed that project for a year, from March to August, September. When the potatoes were ready, it was all off. When we started asking, where did the 500,000 go? And nobody would utter a word. We went straight to the social workers. And that's why we had a strong feeling that the social workers do give the project to the people, you know, posting against Mama Giza. That's what we're thinking, because at the end of the day, these projects are not sustainable. You will always fund the same project now and again without any improvement. Talking about the public service in the social development, does the department have maybe a sort of a training so that the people who are employed by the department treat our people with dignity? You know, it's bad when you get to an office, you get a lady sitting on a chair, putting her feet on the table, cutting their nails during working hours. And outside there is a long queue for elder people who need assistance. So it also comes back to that whistleblowing. But these people who are in the, who are giving public service, they need intensive training. How to treat people. They don't have to shout at our people. They don't have to think of the disabled. You know, there's a lot that is happening down in the provinces, which you need to know as the National Social Department here, so that nobody puts a blame national, and yet all the bad things are happening in the provinces. I don't know whether I'm putting it right. Yes, I'm done. Thank you, Professor. I was late. I couldn't get all the things that you said before. But I just want to say a few things. Pardon me, I'm sick. My voice is gone. First of all, I think last time we've worked hard as this committee. We've done most of the legislation. All of them were passed. And we're left with regulations. And I think then we'll be having the irresponsibility, all of us, of to say to it that all what was passed is done. And also we have then the duty of doing the oversight. And that, I think that will be our responsibility. We all the persons bill, I think we're left with the regulations. I don't see anything saying what is said about the regulations in this, in this thing of the all the persons thing. So I want to get clarity on that. How far are they? What are we doing? Also, in terms of this project that we're talking about is in generating programs or the monitoring mechanisms. What are the monitoring mechanisms? I think we need to get all the projects that are funded by NDA and Social Development and this committee in order for us to assist the department in terms of doing the oversight role and monitoring these projects. They are viable. They are employing people. They are generating income. So that our purpose is to alleviate poverty. So if then we give projects to people, that project is not growing, then we will see it early so that then we can look at the mechanism of assisting those people. We don't want social development to look at the people that were good in doing project plans of that time. We want you to assist even those who don't know how to use money, and you monitor them, you assist them, so that at the end of the day, they can do something for other people and for themselves. So we are encouraging that, but then assist us in order for us to assist you in terms of identifying these projects and give us in our provinces, right, in these provinces. You know, one time I said in this committee, there was a project that was there in 1980, in the 80s. That project was a project that was not doing anything. It was business combined of one person. But that person was getting money from MDA, getting money from Social Development for herself at the end of the day, because those people are doing this. She gives this to people in my community. Those people are getting five rand something, and then they will take those things and go and sell them with huge amount of money, which they don't love that money back. So in order for us then to monitor those, assist us in terms of knowing those projects, so that then we identify them in our program and come back to you, so that at the end of the day, they do the right thing for our people. Thank you, Professor.
Thank you very much, Member McCarthy. Before I give over to the Deputy Minister and the team of the NDA and Social Development to respond, I would like to ask a few questions myself. is there any other members before I do that that would like to ask a few questions? Honourable Member Adams.
Ek het 'n bietjie laat gekom, maar ek verwys op bladsy 46 na die Kimojo-program. Ek wil weet of daardie program dieselfde is as wat deur die Departement van Onderwys bedryf word, en of Social Development saam met Onderwys werk in daardie program. En ek weet, Onderwys in die Noord-Kaap het ook so'n program wat spesifiek met kinders werk. Dan ook, geachte voorzitter, die leslijstprogramme word duisende rande word in hulle gepomp. Mense wil graag hê, daar moet 'n uiteensetting wees van die suksesse wat ten opsigte van die leslijstprogramme tot dusver bereik is. Ek sal daar afsluit eers, voorzitter. Dankie.
Yes, Chairperson, thank you. I'd like to congratulate the department for the presentations. It's not a question, Chair, but I'd like to add with the establishment of the Community Development Forum. What is the role of the forum, and is there any training or budget for that forum? Because the departments go to the communities to establish that forum, but when they go, there's nothing happens in the community. I believe there will be a constitution also with a training for that forum. Thank you, Chair.
Any other member?
In terms of the non-governmental organization or NGOs that are registering in huge numbers, is there any stage where we can say that this is enough? Because presently now there's a lot of people who are registering for NPOs, and some of them not even an NPO, an individual people. Is there any way where we can come with a target? Or those that are existing, any mechanism where we can promote a consortium where they can work together? The ones that are self-sufficient, self-sustainable, to be there to mentor them in terms of how they run their own organization. Lastly, in terms of the child-headed families, I couldn't hear anything that you said. I just wanted to find out from the department, are we having the data about the child-headed families and how many applications have been forwarded from those child-headed families?
Honourable Member Lamora.
Thank you. I only have one question, and mine is on the vacancy rate in the department. Vacancy rate in the department, does that affect service delivery? Thank you.
Last Vice Chairperson. I don't know exactly what it's called here, but the home-based care. Just for interest purposes, does the department fund home-based care, any home-based care? Because I know in the communities there's sometimes problems as to who receives funding, who doesn't receive funding. You know, people doing home-based care being funded from health maybe, and those from another section not being funded. So just for my own clarity, the Department of Social Development funds home-based care. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Martin. Coming to the questions that I wanted to raise earlier, in terms of the substance abuse helpline that is being piloted in Gauteng, I would like to know whether it's a 24-hour service. And when are you evaluating the pilot and rolling it out to the other provinces? then, in terms of the School of Industry, now one of our honourable member Kilme raised the issue around reform school. The function is currently with the Department of Education. Is there talks of this function migrating to social development? I think it was an issue that was raised by one honourable member Nelson to me informally, because that seems to have some discussion at the surface in the portfolio committee on basic education. Then if you go to page, to slide 33, the last bullet, facilitate the linkage of carers of social grant beneficiaries to sustainable livelihoods by developing guidelines for implementation of the linking of social grant beneficiaries. Yeah. The issue of the guidelines and the linking, developing guidelines for the implementation of the linking of social grant beneficiaries to sustainable livelihoods. I would like to know, is that a collaboration between SASA and community development? If SASA and Mrs. Clarke can just expand on that for me, please. Then, in terms of integration of services, but is there any example, any strategic initiative where the Department of Social Development, through its community development section, and the NDA are involved in any current project, where obviously you are complementing each other in terms of your different responsibilities?
I think the concern is raised by members is the one concern is they hope that there is no overlapping of responsibility. And I think if Mrs. Schlapo and the presenter from the NDA can just reflect on that. I think one issue that Ms. Adams around the Kimoja campaign. It's a campaign that is with the Department of Social Development. So in the Northern Cape, the department was running it with in partnership with education. So I'm sure there is quite a few programs in the Department of Social Development and Education where they are running programs together, but I'm sure the Kimoja campaign is one of those. Yeah, so DG of Social Development and the Honourable Deputy Minister. These are the questions. I see Honourable Amula has one last question. And very short.
Very short. Thank you, Chair. I was just thinking while I was out now. 2010, we are approaching the 2010 World Soccer Cup. Does the department foresee any possibility of substance abuse problems increasing? And if so, and this might just happen, we are already battling with this problem, are you prepared to tackle the challenges? Any strategy in place to tackle this challenge? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to be very brief and try to deal with issues at a broader level than the department through the guidance of the DG will take the direct question. Unfortunately, Mama Gazi has gone out, but I want to take directly from where she left off. I wanted to say that if you look into the presentations that have been made since last week, it shows a department that is well-grounded, which has laid the foundation, which understands the challenges that are facing the society at large in South Africa, more especially challenges that are related with poverty. And I also see a department that is shifting from a welfareist approach to a community development approach. And I think that is why there is a lot of legislation that has been passed. And when I heard the presentation from welfare services, I heard that a lot of work needs to be done in terms of regulations and implementation. It's a lot of work, I agree. It needs a lot of stamina, but it shows that we are moving also towards empowering communities. We don't want only communities to be recipients, and that's what I've heard. And also, there are stakeholders who are moving to work with communities, not with a few individuals who are able to write projects. For instance, NDA, they said they take a proposal, but also they take a plan of action of an organization, which says that we are prepared to go out and work with people and see if they'll be able to implement whatever they think of doing. They are not just sending people away. And one other thing that I've identified since I joined the department is that it is really trying to work with rural people. Most of the things that are being done
or some, not most of them, some of them are focusing in APEX, a project in nodal areas, as there is also a Department of Rural Development that the minister has said we are going to work with so as to ensure that we eradicate poverty. Also, when on the issues of the budget, I think the DG and the CFO did mention when we were here that we are faced with the challenges of recession and there is going to be belt tightening and the department or everyone is going to account for each and every cent that is going to be used. And for me, another person would have put it negatively and said there is no money, there is a challenge. But it was put upon us that there is going to be a belt tightening, and recession has also come to South Africa, and the president did mention that we are going to face a problem of that problems that are related to funding. The programs also that we are running, some are focused directly to social development work, but others are integrated, and that is why there's intersectoral work with other departments, and we are not a standalone. And that is meant to ensure that we eradicate poverty in its totality, and that we don't only give a grant to people. We try and take them out of poverty. And I think that is what I've seen, and I agree with since we came into the department. Training, I agree there are programs that are collapsing, but both welfare services and NDA did say that they are training people, training community development practitioners by welfare services, as well as training of community development organizations by NDA, of which I think is meant to ensure that our people are trained so that they can also contribute towards their development. They can be able to monitor, they can be able to even incubate their programs if it comes to a push. So, I think that is meant to ensure that we have a participatory development or democracy, if you want to say. And also timelines. One member raised the issue of timelines. At some stage, at the end of the presentation on community development, the DG was very clear to say that where there is buy, we must put in. It's put in terms of yes, it's each year. I won't be able to put a proper language, I'm still learning. But it's because he said if you say bye, it means it's still coming. And we are in 2009 this year, which means that there are projects that have to be completed or programs that have to be completed in 2009. And maybe if members want something that is finer, I thought that we're giving a broader report and global report. If members want something that is refined, I know the department has gone to a strategic session. I'm sure members can get that report. I think other issues will be handled by the departmental staff, but I just want us to understand that there is a lot of research that has been done, and that is why we have some of the things that departmental officials are raising are based on empirical evidence, and it's good to have facts because you are able to implement what you've been doing, and I think we need to appreciate the work that has been done by the former minister, Comrade Dola Skweyiya. He has really laid the foundation, and that is why we are saying now we have a challenge of ensuring that we implement
all the legislation that has been put into place. We work with the portfolio committee so as to ensure that they also monitor what is happening on the ground. And yeah, that is what I wanted to raise. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will not wish to steal the thunder of the DDGs and the chief directors from the relevant programs. So I will not tackle the difficult questions that have been raised, but I'm sure they will leave the easier ones for me to move up on in the end. What I would like to deal with is perhaps one question, and I'm also going to ask the COO to deal with one other question, which is a conceptual one on the matter of sustainability. I think it has come up several times. I will just focus on this one relating to what is considered duplication between the department and the National Development Agency. The starting point is this, that while the National Development Agency has a direct reporting line through the CEO, through the board, to the Minister of Social Development, the NDA, if you look at its history, doesn't only work with the Department of Social Development. It, in fact, works with all departments of government. You will find in its program resonance with what the Department of Agriculture is doing, what the Department of Trade and Industry is doing, and several other departments. So, in a sense, we shouldn't limit ourselves to what social development is doing, but rather look at government in its totality. We did, however, do an audit of instances where there appears to be duplication that we can do something about. Last year, we prepared a draft bill which we presented to Cabinet, and we were advised that perhaps there wasn't enough time for Parliament to deal with any new legislation. We were looking at the possibility of amending the NDA legislation. Apart from dealing with the constitution of the composition of the board, we were also hoping to look at those instances where, say for an example, the NDA is directly involved in research and policy work, which may be perceived as something that the department itself must be focusing on, and that the NDA should be doing implementation. We've also recognized the fact that there are competencies that are resident within the NDA, such as their capacity to work with NGOs, capacitate them, which is something we are enjoined by our policies to do, but something we do not necessarily have the capacity to do in the department. So we are looking at those complementarities, and we're trying to find a way of ensuring that we eliminate unnecessary duplication and streamline our processes, so that even as we work together, we are very clear as to exactly who does what. So rather, we would like to see more of what Chairperson you were asking. We would like to see more complementarity rather than duplication. And for us to get to that stage, we need to continue with the work we've already started of looking at exactly what is it that the NDA should be doing vis-a-vis what it is that the department should be doing, and look at the desirability of amending the NDA Act to do exactly that. Part of, for example, the challenge that the NDA faces is one of funding. I don't suppose they have enough funding for capacity building for NGOs, but you would find that there is some budget in the Department of Social Development meant for that, which budget we may not be able to meaningfully spend because we don't necessarily have the capacity to expend on it, but that we could in fact engage the services of the NDA for that purpose, and if we are permitted, make sure that we make a transfer to the NDA for it to do that kind of work. And in that way, we will improve our system. So it's certainly something that we've already started working on, and we hope that in not so distant a future, we will resolve those matters and hopefully come to the committee for some further engagement. Mr. Dango will deal with the issue of sustainability, and then the DDGs and the acting CEO of the NDA will do that. We'll also field the rest of the questions.
Thank you, Chair. Just wanted to talk about the sustainability issue a bit more broadly, and I'm sure there will be more details being given by some of my colleagues. But the issue of sustainability in relation to projects has been one of the issues that's been dazzling the development world over the last 60 years. In essence, there's been a lot of debate about when you actually invest in communities through projects, what is the kind of returns for that? And you've got numerous books written on the failure of development, in a sense that when you measure it in actual rands and cents, it's seen as a failure. But if you actually measure it in other issues other than income, for example, the investment in capacities, the investment in skills, the issues of self-reliance, then it's measured as a relative success. So I think as a department and as the NDA, we're going to have to do some homework in how do we begin to conceptualize that kind of investment. Because it's generally three areas that we engage with in terms of NGOs. The one is vendors. Non-profit organizations are essentially vendors to the department. They are organizations who do work on our behalf. We are those organizations that employ social workers, they do welfare services work. And as vendors, they are part of our value chain. So that means they are critical. In essence, we must make sure that we actually build that capacity, just as we build the capacity of any other vendor of the department. In a larger scale, SASA is a vendor of the department. In a larger scale, the NDA is another vendor of the department. So those small NGOs are actually vendors at community level. So we need to invest in their capacity. We need to invest in their abilities to do their work. So that is one area of work that we need to focus on. As both as the department and the NDA. The second tier of organizations that we engage with is essentially those developmental projects, where we begin to look at the issue of self-reliance, income generation, and that area is a lot more difficult, because that is the area where we're trying to experiment and innovate. So we're putting money into communities, we're putting money into innovations around self-employment, and there we need to begin to measure, are we reaching the objectives? Because, and what are objectives? Are objectives to generate income? Do we want to generate jobs, or do we want to actually invest in community capacity? And I think that is where strategic objective one that my colleagues spoke about mentioned the issue of community foundations. Not the community forum, but the actual issue of community foundations, because there's an alternative emerging, and it's not emerging, it's been emerging for the last 15 years, but that begins to posit that if you actually invest in community foundations and you actually begin to engage with community resources and the private sector on a matching fund basis, and that those foundations then begin to operate like many MDAs in the community. So if we give them $5 million, we will then get a corporate sector organization to give $5 million, and the community can raise own resources. And then they spend only a percentage of that money on an annual basis, but they keep the principle intact. There's been experience internationally, and also here, we just discovered recently on the West Coast, there's a West Coast Community Foundation Association that we need to be visiting. And that's been funded by private foundations. That could be a model for us that we can compare with the money that we put into projects versus money putting into community foundations, where the communities decide what they want to fund, whether it's a self-help initiative, whether it's a bursary for talented students, but it becomes a more sustainable way of funding community development, and I think that's what strategic objective one speaks to, but we didn't go into detail on those issues. And the third element, and it's linked to that, is our investment in civil society for the sake of strengthening democracy, for giving people the space to engage at community level, engage with local government, engage with national departments. Those are generally advocacy groups at local level. And there the issue of sustainability is a lot more difficult, because these are almost recurring expenses. You're going to be funding those kind of organizations purely because they're important that they exist. So there's not going to be a question of what's the return out of that. The return is more social cohesion. And in those areas, I don't think we need to be expecting sustainability. Those are the kind of organizations that will need to be funded on an ongoing basis. Perhaps the scale will reduce over time if they can actually get endowment from other sources. But that category of organizations where we want to fund civil society organizations because it's important to have that kind of organization in African communities, we're not going to get the kind of returns in terms of sustainability. The return is beyond financial issues. It's the kind of organization that keeps communities together. And the value there is you're funding social cohesion and the spillovers there. So I just wanted to put that on the table because we haven't really discussed it enough as a sector, and I'm glad this question has emerged because it allows us together with the committee to look at how do we improve on that and get that kind of model or engagement with civil society right.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My colleague has just addressed the very first question with regard to the question was who is funding communities. He has touched on some of those aspects, but just also to add a little bit in terms of that, to say in terms of funding the communities, communities are funded by everyone. And when I say that, it's because it depends what the funding is for. You have funding that comes from social government-wide on various services that are provided by government, where you have NGOs, as my colleague indicated, delivering services on behalf of government. But also you have the private sector that is also funding through social investment initiatives, funding the communities. And I think for us, especially social development, is also strategically to ensure that those private sector organizations, when they engage in social investment projects, we direct them appropriately to the extent that they contribute to what we want to achieve in terms of community development, for example. And around the question on my colleague will respond on the question with regard to community development workers versus community development practitioners. There was a question on broadly, and I think it was referred to the department, the fact that when we presented, we did not mention challenges. Does it mean we don't have challenges? I think in the presentation, in a way, we mentioned the challenges. And also, if we recall, last week when we presented again, some of those challenges were highlighted to say, given broadly the challenges that are there, given in terms of society with regard to poverty, with regard to development of skills, and those issues that were mentioned, and looking at social development now, looking at the budget that we have, I mean, even the CFO indicated how the budget has been reduced and the impact of that thereof in terms of what we would have wanted to achieve, more than what we are presenting as the output that we want to achieve for the financial year. And indeed, in terms of the areas that we have presented today, in terms of the output that we want to achieve, we have considered the limited resources that we have. But broadly speaking, we have the challenges because we would want to have more money in terms of ensuring that we address the broader challenges that are there. And other challenges which I mentioned personally as I was presenting, I even indicated that with regard to the responsibility on administering the NPO Act, that function on its own is a function that requires a lot of not just resources financially, but even in terms of human resources, because if we are talking about over 56,000 NPOs that are registered, and what the Act requires in terms of monitoring such organizations, it begins to say that there's a bigger challenge in terms of ensuring that. And particularly if we're talking about the challenges that we identify around the issues that have been raised by the committee on the capacity of NPOs, because there are challenges around the capacity of NPOs in terms of ensuring that they comply to the Act, and that requires capacitating those NPOs to the extent that they are able to comply with the Act. It's a challenge on its own to ensure that you capacitate, and particularly taking into account that those 56,000 NPOs that are registered, they are not the NPOs that are delivering services for social development. It's a wide range of NGOs that are delivering various services in terms of that. And maybe whilst I'm talking about NGOs, if I can respond to the question that I've raised around at what stage are we going to stop the registration of NGOs? Are we going to say we can now stop to register the NGOs? We cannot. Unfortunately, we cannot. We cannot stop registering NGOs. But the question also, there was another question was saying, because there are individuals that register as NGOs. The Act is clear on in terms of governance structures and what is required for any organization to be registered as an NGO. It is clear in terms of that. It's clear in terms of governance structures. That is why sometimes you find that a number of organizations would say they have applied to register but were not registered because they could not meet the requirements in terms of what is stipulated in terms of registration. So it's clear in terms of who should be, you know, what is required in terms of that organization for it to be registered as an organization. Yeah. There was a question on is the department doing enough to train NPOs? I've already responded there to say there are a number of challenges in terms of the capacity of NPOs, and those challenges are twofold. Generally about managing the NPO itself, which would raise from management issues in terms of coming up with the strategy or the work plan for the NPO, managing finances, managing reporting, and there are issues that relate not just to managing of NPOs, but also even in terms of direct service delivery, if I can put that way. And that is where the role of NGA becomes very important, because when we need to work together as NGA, and actually we're working together in terms of the capacity of NGOs to say, for an NGO, for example, to be able to be registered, what capacity needs are there? And then you address those needs. Once an NGO has been registered, what capacity needs are there to ensure that the NPO continues to comply in terms of the NPO? But even generally in terms of management issues, the study that I mentioned briefly when I was presenting, which we conducted around the management capacity of NGOs in terms of, it was in terms of home community-based care, but when the issues that came out of that research did not really talk to home community-based care per se, but related to management of NPOs generally. And those issues related to the capacity issues around the indicated management. And the program that we are currently implementing that I spoke to is beginning to address those management capacity issues, not just for home community-based care organizations, but broadly speaking in terms of NGOs generally. So you can see that there are a lot of gaps and a lot of challenges in terms of the capacity of NGOs. And I cannot really, I'm sure as the department, we cannot sit here and really say we are able to address all the capacity issues given the number of organizations. With the limited resources that we have, we identify areas where we can address, and that is why we said
for this financial year, we have identified a certain number of rural areas where we would build capacity in those areas. So we are guided by the limited resources that we have. On the 100 CDPs, the question around whether they are spread all over the provinces, those 100 CDPs are spread across all the 9 provinces. And again, the number there, that 100, was guided by the available resources to say, with the resources that we have this financial year, how many CDPs can we manage to train? I hope I understood properly the question that was raised on Love Life to say what is the success of the Love Life program. The question. A vice president said I indicated that given the amount of money that we put in terms of this program, there is indeed a need to monitor the implementation of this program. And actually, one of the areas where we had identified as a department, but unfortunately it's not part of this financial year, is in terms of conducting a study broadly to evaluate the impact of Love Life generally. However, we do have the report that we do get in terms of what has been achieved in each financial year with regard to Love Life program. But it is the intention of the department going forward to have a broader impact study in terms of evaluating the impact of the Love Life program. My colleague will address the role of Community Development Forum. The question on whether we do fund the home community-based care, yes, the department at provincial level funds the home community-based care. And actually, because we have a relationship in terms of home community-based care, we're working closely with the Department of Health. Department of Health also is funding home community-based care. And you'll recall, Honourable Members, that home community-based care is part also of expanded public works program. So which means it's also about training the caregiver. And therefore, both the social development at provincial level as well as health is funding home community-based care. On linking the Honourable Chair, your question on slide 33 around facilitating the linkage of social grants to sustainable livelihoods, whether are we working closely with SASA? Actually, we are working closely not with SASA, but with the social security unit within at national level. But not only that, as a department, but working closely with other departments, because when you link the social grant beneficiaries, but with here. Yeah. What is it?
Recipients.
Yes. When you link them to certain livelihoods and economic opportunities, you need to work with other departments also who are responsible for creating jobs and developing the skills. So it's important, that's one program, that is an integrated program. We're working closely within the department with various units, but also with other departments outside the social development.
Other departments, but not with SASA.
We're not working with SASA, but in terms of SASA, it's SASA that's got the database that enabled us to see those grants
beneficial.
Yes. We use the database that is there to ensure that we link those in terms of those. But that's the only link.
So they provide the data.
Yes, they provide the data because they have the data. Yes.
My colleague will answer the.
Thanks, Chair. I will start with the Community Development Forum. In communities, there are community change agents or community champions. And in most instances, they operate in their own to try and ensure that there is something happening in communities. They actually organize communities. Now, community development forums would be like your community of interest or community practice forum, where we can bring these change agents in communities together to be able to engage on issues in communities, but also to use that as a platform of also skilling those people in terms of facilitating community-based research and ensuring that they drive community development from an informed perspective. So it's basically a mechanism to continuously strengthen the capacity in communities of those that are already acting and are very active in communities as champions and change agents in communities. So that is the community development forum. It's not developing or creating or establishing other structures in communities, because there are structures already in communities that are engaging in development. But there are those people that are change agents in their own right and are driving community development in the different communities. And then in attempting to distinguish between CDWs and CDPs, community development practitioners and community development workers, I think one should begin perhaps by painting a context in terms of where these two come from. The community development worker is a cadre that was established by the DPSA to ensure that there is improved service delivery, and their role is to identify at the household level those services that are not reaching communities, households, and then refer those households or provide them with information. It's not it's not limited to social development. It's information across the board, government services that are not reaching communities, and they are actually ensuring that those services are reaching communities. So they were established by the DPSA, but located within DPLG. Now, they are community development workers, so they are actually information conduits or information officers who are actually making sure that communities, households are informed in terms of government-wide services. Now, in terms of the community development practitioner in social development, I think it is important, again, to indicate that social development has two key elements, or the social development approach has got two key elements, which is protection and investment. And then community development practitioners are also participating in that process. And there is actually in a social protection framework, there is a continuum of service delivery from protection, prevention, promotion, and transformation. And in all those levels, community development practitioners are playing a role in the department. And they're playing a role in terms of mobilizing communities to ensure their participation and involvement in decisions about their own development. So they are mobilizing communities, and they're also facilitating the implementation of community development programs, which could be the income generating projects or household food production or any other community development programs that are responding not only to the needs but also in terms of strengthening the assets that are existing in the specific communities and households. They also provide support to community-based organizations in terms of implementing capacity building programs, as well as assisting CDOs to apply for registration and also strengthening the networks that are existing in communities. They also coordinate youth work, because at the community level, it is CDPs that also coordinate youth work in terms of ensuring that the young people do have access to information, ensuring that the youth development centers have got capacity, and that they're actually driving community youth work in communities. They also facilitate community-driven development through strengthening the capacity of communities to engage in decisions, as I've indicated earlier on, to ensure that the projects and programs are responding appropriately to the needs and also in terms of strengthening the others. And that is the reason, again, in the mainstreaming of the sustainable livelihoods approach, which is an approach that is aiming at building the capacity that is existing in communities and also ensuring that there are appropriate linkages of the capacities in the households to also opportunities that are existing in the communities. So the community development practitioners are actually facilitating development as opposed to CDWs who are actually providing information on broad or government-wide services to ensure that they are accessed by those that require them.
Maybe before my colleague from NDA attempt to answer this question, may I deal with the governance question that was asked about what happened to the CEO? I think it was from this side. Let me report before the portfolio committee that the CEO tendered his resignation during the course of February, and his last day in the office was the 31st of March. Such processing of resignation was done through the board as well as the shareholder accepted the resignation. We are currently in the process of recruiting the new CEO, and we will report before the portfolio committee in due course. I think that was the clarity that needed to be provided. Again, there was one important question that came relating to availing the project. I think my colleagues would like to deal with that one, but I would like to address the whole question on the issue of the appointment of the board, which the DG said there was an attempt last year to look into the policy matters. This current board, there was an attempt to appoint the board in terms of the representativity from the civil society. And in these cases, there are representatives not from all provinces, but from some of the provinces. Most of the provinces are represented in this board. So it will be important, I think, that is the thinking of the board, that we would want to engage with the current portfolio committee and avail the projects that are within those provinces so that the portfolio members of the portfolio committee are aware. And we will request our executives maybe to avail that information, because I heard there was a concern that people would want to know the number of projects that are in different provinces in order to interact with them. I think it will be vital important that we avail that, we will work around that area, and we will make that information available to all members of the portfolio committees if they are representatives of various provinces. I think those two questions I think are dealt with satisfactorily. I would request my colleagues to deal with key strategic questions, some of the questions which I believe there was an attempt to address them. The whole issue of monitoring mechanism, I think there's a dire need to address how do we do monitor our project. There's also dire need on how we do train, conduct our training on financial management within the project. There's also a dire need on the sustainability of the project, the collapse of the project during the last year. There's also a dire need to deal with the budget issues within the project. How do you go about? I think those are strategic questions you can deal with them. I hope it helps.
Thank you. With regards to the sustainability, the NDA will never be sustainable, or we never consider the return on investment when we do a project. We will never fund projects in that case. Most of our projects, we consider, before we do the project, we consider the due diligence, and that's part of our administration costs. And we consider how many jobs we're going to create in that project. We're going to consider the beneficiaries of those projects. We're going to consider, is the project and the proposal viable in that specific provincial area. So it's to us, it's more about how many beneficiaries and kids are going to sleep with full tummy chair, and rather than the sustainability of a project. That's what our mandate is all about.
So we concentrate on those issues. Our focus is not on the return. However, we do work on the sustainability of the project. I'll give an example. We have an orange farm project, and we try to maintain the sustainability where we go to a Department of Science and Technology and we see how we can assist that project in making juice of the oranges. That is the type of issues we deal with. We try and see how we can market the products. That is what we do for the project. But we try and keep them alive. And after that, we try and make the project make a bit of money out of the a proposal they've done. But the rural areas here, that's where our focus is. We don't do urban areas a lot, but mostly in rural areas. And we also consider where, as Ruben earlier stated, the focus of the poverty nodes are in our country and in our provinces. Some provinces are more in need of funding than other provinces, so we don't equally distribute funds nationally. Monitoring and evaluation here, again, Ruben will speak more about it, but we have spoken about tranches. We don't pay, once the board has approved a project, we don't pay in a lump sum. We will pay over three tranches, and normally the first tranche, certain commitments must be done, like a bank account must be opened, they have to sign a contract, etc. After 6 months or a period as stated in the contract, it will say you will have to submit a financial report. We monitor, we go out to do evaluation on the project, we submit the evaluation, it goes through the process in the NDA before we pay the second tranche. And if there is issues, if we pick up issues in that period of the first tranche, we will try and resolve it. If there's conflict, we do the conflict resolution. If there's capacity building needed, we do that. So it's a constant monitoring and evaluation process for the project. Ruben can also speak about that. Jobs are created. When we do the due diligence, and before we even consider the project here, we consider how many jobs are being created, how many beneficiaries are in the project, and we also monitor that on a 6-monthly basis. So we try and do it 6-monthly, sometimes 3 months, depending on the life of the project. But we do that. That's part of our monitoring and evaluation. The number of projects, yes, we will submit it to your office chair, to the portfolio committee members. The acting CEO's answer, it was answered. Monitoring done. Integration with the DSP was answered. Yes, chair, we do need more money, like I said. We get applications of 400 applications annually, more than 400 applications, and we only do about 80 projects maximum we can approve. We don't have the funds to actually do more on the
time. Just very quickly, Chair, I think what I need to clarify is that we may not be in a position to guarantee sustainability, but we are certainly in a position to strive towards it. And how we strive towards that is recognition, of course, of the fact that indeed the projects are collapsing. And the reason why these projects collapse is not because of money. It's because of four things primarily. The first one is institutional capacity. The second one is monitoring. The third one is mentoring. And the fourth one is access to market. And we believe that if we deal with those issues in an integrated and coherent manner, we should be able to cultivate some measure of sustainability for our projects. The issue of access to market has to do with not only access, but also product quality assurance, which is something that we are already investing substantial resources in. We are also talking to a number of, I don't want to call them cartels or gatekeepers, but established institutions that operate in the space that we operate in. The Pork Association of South Africa, the Poultry Association of South Africa, and so on.
because those institutions are very critical in terms of value and supply chain. So if you don't talk to them from an input level, production level, and access to market level, you're doomed. Secondly, Chair, by this time next year, we hopefully would have a situation where honorable members will simply go to our website, click on the Free State, see all the projects that they engage funding, see the pictures, and even download the videos if they wish to. We've already started on that project, but for this financial year, we will avail the necessary information via appropriate channels. Thank you, Chair.
Any other questions need to be answered?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to answer certain questions, general ones, and then my colleague Connie Malo will answer the questions related to substance abuse and social crimes. I'll start with the scholarship. There were questions on the scholarship program with regards to who benefits. The provincial department assist the national department in the recruitment and the final screening of the applicants for the scholarship program. And in some sense, instances, provinces also target poor young learners, especially child-headed households and orphans from rural areas. There's a cross-section, population within the scholarship program. It's not only children from a certain specific area, it's children from both rural and urban areas. I think there's a confusion with regard to children who come from Mpumalanga. It could also be children from Northern Cape because there's no university in that area. So when they are reflected in their report, they're reflected as children who are in Mpumalanga, but in Limpopo, as if they got a scholarship from Limpopo. Those children have been awarded a scholarship by the Mpumalanga province, or the province of their origin, and they have a contact with that specific province. So I just wanted to clear that confusion. How are the students once they have qualified absorbed? If students have got a contact with the province which awarded the scholarship to the students. And then once the student has qualified, that contract obligates the students to work 2 years for the department or for that specific program, program. We know that there are instances where the students, the newly qualified social workers in some provinces, are unable to find employment in government. I know of Western Cape, they have got an agreement or an understanding with the NGO sector that such newly qualified social workers can be employed by the NGO sector. And we have also asked all the provinces to do the same, to have an understanding or an agreement with the NGO sector, so that if we are not able to absorb the students because of the, it could be infrastructure of problems, lack of office space, and the lack of supervisors, then they can go and work within the NGO sector. We've also requested each project, each province, to have an adoption plan for every individual student that is on a scholarship program. That will make it easy at the end, when these young people are qualified social workers, then they can be easily slotted into a specific office or specific region. With regard to the NGO funding, we are aware at National that I think we've also been cautious as well of not allocating funds. At the time, at least to the NGOs. But at provincial level, it's also a major problem because those are the NGOs, in fact, that need the money most because they're delivering services. The provinces, they allocate funding to the NGOs in accordance to the policy of financial awards. And however, the policy is not implemented in a uniform manner. What we are doing at National now, we are evaluating the policy so that we can understand what causes the provinces not to allocate funds currently. We also aware that they've got problems in terms of issues of compliance that might cause the delay. If the NGO doesn't have all the necessary documents available and the audit report and everything, it makes the allocation or the transfer of funds very difficult, especially for NGOs that are just newly established. We also, after we've evaluated the financial policy, we'll review the policy, and ultimately that policy will become, we hope that it will become a legislation, so that the transfer of the financing of NGOs should be rather statutory, rather than, you know, left to each province. We also hope that with the Nomsa Ghana project, that which will help us to be more precise in our decisions when we fund the NGOs. There was a question with regards to are we going to succeed with our targets, especially that we don't have sufficient social workers. I think the response to that question is that we are not only looking at social workers to deliver services or to deliver on these policies and legislation that we have just presented today. We are also looking at other social service professions, such as the child and youth care workers, the social auxiliary workers. There was also a mention of community development workers, that we are looking at quite a broader I'll say professions or other categories of professions that will deliver services on these policies. We've done quite a headway in terms of the training and placement of social auxiliary workers, and we are trying to regulate child and youth care workers so that they can be registered and be fully recognized as employees of the department and in the NGO sector. And then with regard to implementation, there were questions around timelines. Do you have timelines for this, the implementation of these legislations and policies? We did develop the policies and legislation and programs with provinces and other departments. For example, with the legislation I mentioned earlier, that we have implementation plans at national, you know, for all those, all the different departments have for those plans. And the provinces also have developed their own implementation plan. So we ensure that each province will have an implementation plan for each policy that we develop. And, okay, there was a question on, I think I'm done. Yeah.
Is having his or her phone on silent? Just to take it away from the mic, we are rounding off our meeting because it's we're running over time.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll deal with questions related to substance abuse and social crime prevention as indicated. The first one was the Gimoja Awareness Program. Why two provinces? Chair, is purely due to lack of resources. But however, provinces are expected to implement this program all year round with their own budget. So what we do at national level is just support to ensure that we elevate this program, because it's a national branded project where we involve media, the ambassadors that we have appointed, and the roadshow is going to take events door to door, issuing of pamphlets and so on. So it's purely due to lack of resources. We would have loved to roll out to all provinces or support all provinces at a given time. And I think the chair has answered that question, that is the same with the education program that is implemented. This program is, of course, integrated and is implemented together with various government departments. There's also a national steering committee chaired by the National Youth Commission. Now it is called now maybe the Youth National Youth Agency. Then the second question was about the correctional facilities, the six of them. I do have the names. It's Pretoria, Kroonstad, Hoogtvlei, Paulsmoor, Westville, and Port Elizabeth. The identification of these six facilities was based on statistics, and it was discussed also with DCS in terms of the number of children who were there at the GIF at that time last year. And this was a pilot last year, but unfortunately we can't roll it out to other provinces due to lack of funds this year. What we're going to do is to evaluate whether we have made an impact this year. The third question is about the young offender. I think it's important to mention that as a department we do have diversion programs which we provide for children in conflict with the law. Those who have committed minor offenses, they are assessed and also placed in a diversion program. But it should be noted that DSD, we only recommend diversion to the court, but the court is the final say in terms of agreeing whether that child can go through a diversion program or not. That is why you find that other children end up in prison or in correctional facilities. It is not a wish of DSD, but somehow the courts see it necessary that they should recommend that that child should await trial in a correctional facility. Then the issue of the reform schools and the school of industry, I think we are aware that the Children's Act, I think specifically Chapter 13, is proposing that we all facilities that are accommodating children should be called child and youth care facilities. So our reform schools and school of industries, your secure care, they will become programs. So the Act clearly indicates that although reform schools and schools of industries are currently run by education, within 2 years of the implementation of the Children's Act, those facilities should be handed over to social development. What I can currently report is that there's a team from both social development and education which is working on the transition or transferring of such facilities to DSD by the end of 2 years. This year, what is happening, we are working on the plan, and then hopefully that next year, the transfer process, next financial year, the transfer process will be finalized. Because as I speak, I think the Act is not yet officially implemented. So we still have time, but we have not waited for that time. We have started the process. In terms of substance abuse helpline, yes, it was piloted in Gauteng. What we did as a department, we evaluated every 6 months because we wanted to see whether it is making an impact. What I can report is that this line now is open to all provinces, but the organization that is running this line for us is really experiencing problems in terms of number of calls and number of counselors they've got. This line is managed by the South African Depression and Anxiety Group. Due to limited budget, we thought we would decentralize the line to each province so that the SADC can also have staff or officers in each province. However, that we cannot do that due to lack of funds, but we agreed with them that we can open the line for all provinces to access assistance. I can also give members the number of the toll-free, because we also have an SMS facility for this line. The number is 0800 12 13 14. Then the SMS line is 32312. The last one that I need to answer is the 2010 one on the whether we anticipate that there will be an increase around substance abuse. Definitely we do anticipate, as we were anticipating even during this Confederation Cup. What is happening that we also participate in the JCTS cluster, and we are also members of the Joint Operations Committee that is having a broader plan on the 2010. As I speak, we also sit at the National Nerve Center, both at, even at provincial level, we do have people sitting at nerve centers where if there is a problem, we'll be able to identify and deal with it. However, I need to mention that the issue of substance abuse is not only to be dealt about with social development. We also need to deal with the issue of border control and ports of entry, because during that time, there will be issue of trafficking in children, trafficking in women, trafficking in drugs. So I think this committee is also dealing with that, because at that time there's also a border control committee that is dealing with such issues. So as a department, we contribute to that plan to make sure that our prevention and intervention treatment facilities are ready to be able to deal with the situation in terms of those three issues, in terms of trafficking of women, also the issue for unaccompanied minors from around the borders who would want to watch soccer. So those are the issues that we're dealing with currently. Thank you.
There was a question on border fencing. Yes. There was a question on older persons regulations. You didn't answer it. Okay. The regulations, they're ready. We're just waiting for approval from the National Treasury, from the Minister of National Treasury of Finance, concurrent. And once we get that concurrent, we'll be able to implement, to get it implemented.
Thank you, Chair. There was a question around the attitude of our frontline staff towards the citizens. We have, as a sector, adopted a customer care strategy that seeks to address those issues. Issues that relate to human resource development, changing of attitudes, and turning around the organizational culture so that it is customer focused. Due to limited resources, obviously, we will not have a widespread rollout of the program. So we are looking at piloting the approaches that are included in the strategy. But some of the other things that we are doing in line with the strategy, this morning, members of the committee were furnished with service handbooks, customer care charter, and so on and so on. So all of those instruments are instruments that are aimed at developing our customers to understand what they should be expecting from us, the kind of service, and if they are not satisfied with that service, what is their recourse, who do they call, and so on. So it's not just marketing material, but effectively it's instruments we're going to use to enlighten people more about the kind of services we're offering as a sector. Thank you.
Social development.
Thank you.
I've been browsing through this National Service Handbook, and I think it is an excellent example of how the way the department should go. You know, the public, educating the public out there, they exactly know what to bring with that will save costs for poor people in rural areas to get to point, knowing what they need, knowing what will be asked of them. So I want to congratulate you. This is excellently done. I'm just not very happy to know that funds are not available. I know we are going through a decision, but it's not.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Honorable Member Lambula. Honorable Member, that all your questions been answered? Are you satisfied? Honorable Member Kipane?
My question is not answered, Chair. My question was, also the Department of Social Development, are they having a data about the child-headed families? If they are not having the data, how do they prioritize their program or their activities?
Thank you, Chair.
The department has just finalized this study. There is a report on child-headed households. And although it's giving a general view of the extent or the prevalence of child-headed households in the country, but with respect to understanding the getting the data on child-headed households, we have also engaged into a study of maternal orphans. So we can tell you exactly where maternal orphans are in the country, by province, by district, actually even by ward. But that does not mean that these children are child-headed, but they are vulnerable if they don't have a mother. So for the purpose of service delivery, we will be using the data to be able to determine the vulnerability for an individual child. I think in the next portfolio committee meeting, we can be able to give you that data of maternal orphans. That, in fact, would actually even help us to go and identify child-headed households. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Hanuka. I think what would be useful for future presentations, whenever the department has concluded research, whether it's the NDA, SASA, or social development, it is chosen that we have a presentation, or we are invited to by you to have a presentation. That will give members an in-depth knowledge and acquaintance with the data and how they can use that in their constituency. But also in terms of the knowledge if you have a constituency in a certain area and you have this data, you can precisely plan your program of work. But also in terms of your area, your broader problems, provincial problems. But it is an area that I'm sure we will have more information on. Honourable members, let me first start off by saying thank you very much, Honourable Deputy Minister, for gracing us with your presence. Thank you for being with us from the beginning to the end. Also for the DG of Social Development, Ms. Isol and the team, as well as board members of the NDA, as well as the CEO of SASA. Thank you very much for being here today. We will be concluding the committee's report next week, and for that we won't invite you, so we will deliberate on that on our own. Thank you very much for coming. Members, we have received an invitation from Sand Park Rehabilitation Center in Klerksdorp for us to attend an event on the 25th of June in the ballroom of the Municipal Hall in connection with National Drug Week. And we have to... If we can nominate a member of the portfolio committee to attend, just one reminder is that portfolio committee is a